Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
How does it feel?
Like it's someone else's.
Does Sam want to be Captain America? Come on, Anthony.
Everyone wants to be Captain America.
But do you want to be? Does Sam want to be? Do you want Sam to want to be Captain America?
Yes, because I feel like I would get a lot of cool free stuff.
Hi, I'm Dan Patrick, and this is IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick, an Amazon original. The podcast where I talk to some of Hollywood's top actors, directors, and producers about some of their most iconic scenes that have defined their careers, helped shape the cinematic landscape, and have even become fixtures in pop culture. On today's show, we're joined by the actor Anthony Mackie. He grew up in New Orleans, left the Big Easy, and attended Juilliard in New York City. His career began on Broadway and ultimately led him to a career in film. He is instantly recognized for a couple of roles, Papa Doc in 8 Mile, Tupac in Notorious, or Sergeant Sanborn in The Hurt Locker. But arguably his most popular role is Sam Wilson, the Falcon in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He has starred in over 6 films within the franchise and is reprising his role in the series The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. The Marvel Cinematic Universe has made over $22 billion at the box office. The scene in question today is when, after the Avengers defeated Thanos, an elderly Steve Rogers hands over the Captain America shield to Sam, who reluctantly accepts it. Or does he? Did you want to grow up to be a superhero?
The first time I saw the first Iron Man, and I saw what Marvel was doing and how dynamic these characters were, I knew I wanted to be a part of that universe. I just got lucky because they wanted me to. So it was like a marriage made in heaven. When my reps and I went to them, you know, it was more of a thing of not right now. If something comes up, we'll let you know.
And then all of a sudden you get the call. And then what happens?
Then you get the call. When you get the call, you have to fly to LA and you have a meeting. They sit you down and they say, you know, would you be interested in doing a movie with us? We can't tell you what's the movie or the character or what you'll be doing, but would you like to do it? And nobody would say no to that.
You don't have any inkling what it is?
No idea. I had no idea what the character was. I had no idea what the movie was. I had no idea about any of it. All I knew is they wanted me to be in one of their movies.
And then you get the script.
No, you never get a script. Then you get cast and you get in the gym and work out and change your diet and you fly out to wherever they're shooting. And with the Captain America Winter Soldier, I never got a script. I just got the sides when I showed up to set every day to work.
How different is that as an actor that you don't know what happens or the arc of your character as opposed to now you're going to know you can go right to the last couple of pages?
It's impossible. I mean, it was really difficult, but fortunately I had the Russo brothers leading and they were very good about telling me how the different scenes would fit into the movie and what was the overall arc of the movie. So it worked out, but it wasn't the normal process that you're used to at all.
Were you a comic book guy growing up?
I wasn't. And usually when people tell me they were comic book people, I know they're not telling the truth. Because if everybody was reading comic books when we were kids, all the comic book stores wouldn't have went out of business.
But you didn't have, well, you probably watched cartoons on TV that had superheroes, but you just weren't a...
Oh, yeah. Saturday morning cartoons were my favorite thing in my life. Like, you know, I was a big cartoon guy. I love He-Man. I love Thundercats. Like that was, I want them to do a Thundercat movie so I can be one of the Thundercats.
In the scene where you get handed Captain America's shield, you go from sidekick to hero. How's that feel? How did it feel?
Well, it was weird because at no point in time did I accept the shield. Sam never took the shield. When Cap gave him the shield, he says, I don't like it because it's yours. At no point in time did he say, I'm Captain America now. It was more so a sadness of his friend leaving him.
Only thing bumming me out is the fact I have to live in a world without Captain America.
Oh, well. That reminds me. Try it on.
Do you want to be the new Captain America? Do you plan on being? Who's going to be Captain America?
I think you want to be the new. Everybody wants to be the new Captain America.
My talents are very limited to Adam Sandler movies. Just letting you know. But do you want it?
You know, it's a slippery slope. I think for at this day and age, nobody expected us to be where we are today when Endgame came out. You know, so it's interesting now what that moniker means in America, in the world today, as opposed to when the movie came out.
A little trepidation with that?
And I wouldn't even say trepidation. I just think it's a feeling of self-question. You know, as a Black man in America, every day you have to if you have to wake up and ask yourself that question, how's your day going to go and what you're going to put into your day to make sure you make it home safely?
Well, patriotism is difficult to pull off today.
Very difficult there because it has a different meaning to every person. Every patriot is a different patriot for a different reason.
How do we know the good guys from the bad guys? If they're shooting at you, they're bad.
But I would think you would have different factions who would view Captain America quite differently.
Very much so. I think the most important faction is the kids. You know, I think, you know, you look at that's the demographic, the generation that's coming up with a completely different perspective of what the world will be when they become our age. Like, you know, we're done. We're already broken. There's no way for us to be fixed. But we have to make sure our kids and our grandkids are in a better situation than we are. So my grandfather was a sharecropper. My dad was a roofer and I'm an actor, you know? So that's lineage, that's progression through generations. So it's very important, not so much what people my age has to say about Captain America and what he represents, because, you know, who cares? But it's the image and what it means for kids that's most important.
No, you're a lot heavier than you look.
Had a big breakfast.
You didn't answer the question, does Sam want to be Captain America? Come on, Anthony.
Everyone wants to
but
be Captain America.
But do you want to be? Does Sam want to be? Do you want Sam to want to be Captain America?
Yes, because I feel like I would get a lot of cool free stuff.
I'm sure you already get that cool free stuff. But with all the egos that you have on the set, mm-hmm. Do you have a go-to guy? Like, did you have a buddy?
What's interesting is with these movies, of all the movies I've been on and all the stars that are in these movies, I've never really experienced anyone with a ego that I've worked with. I feel like all of us, you know, and you see the pictures, you see the videos, you see all the stuff of us on set. There's a camaraderie between all of the people in these movies because we realize how fortunate we are to be in them. You know, it's not very often that every time you touch the boards, every time you pull out your script, you know it's going to be a home run. And every time these movies come out, people anticipate them, people love them, they're financially successful, and they give you a bump to your career. So, you know, I think we all recognize that and appreciate it. So I haven't come across anybody with an ego that I can't stand to be around in any of these
but
movies.
The guy that you would go to, it feels like you and Chris Evans got a pretty good, yeah. Like you guys could do a buddy movie.
Don't say it. Don't you say
on
it.
Your left.
Come on. Dude, you just ran like 13 miles in 30 minutes.
Guess I got a late start.
Really? You should be ashamed of yourself. You should take another lap. Sam Wilson.
Steve Rogers.
I kind of put that together.
It's good to meet you, Sam.
Chris is my dude. Sebastian's my dude. I had a very good relationship with Chadwick because I had known him so long. And to see him get his just due because he had worked so hard and he did it the right way was kind of great. The same thing with Mahershala. All of us came up together in New York on the theater scene. You know, we were all theater kids. We all went to drama school. We were the drama nerds. And now the three of us are the three, like, pantheons of superhero. So it's cool to see those two guys who worked so hard and did it the right way become, you know, these monikers in the superhero world.
What is the significance, do you think, of Captain America, these movies? What role do you think they play in society?
Well, I think they're the great escape. I feel like with our society and, you know, our, not only our country, our world being what it is, you know, everybody wants that feeling of relief, that ability to escape. And I think when you see the good guys win, it kind of makes you believe that the good guys will actually win in real life when honesty and truth prevails. So I think a lot of people just use these movies as the great escape, and they have a huge attachment to these characters because of it.
The importance to increase representation within superhero films. How do you think Marvel's done?
I don't think that's ever been an issue on screen with Marvel. I think Marvel has always done a very good job of that. You look at other franchises and other movies, and literally Frodo walked around the entire globe and never came across a Black Hobbit, you know? So, you know, I think Marvel did a pretty good job of it.
Well, if you're using that comparison, then yes, it did. Frodo is still looking for his...
Frodo's still looking for a Black friend.
But before you, in this role with Captain America, you had Black Panther, and then I think you go back to, what, Wesley Snipes with Blade?
Well, no, you had Rhodey, who was Iron Man's right hand. You know, but before that, you had Spawn, you had Blade, and that was pretty much it. I mean, the idea of, you know, bringing these characters to life, it takes a lot of, it's a massive undertaking. And I think now in this new generation of Marvel, you know, and having so many characters of different races and makeups, I think they've done a great job with building that into the universe.
I make 7 hostiles.
I make 5.
How far out will you be contacted of the next Marvel movie? Next Captain America?
It's usually like 8 months to a year. They'll start figuring out the dates. And you know, I would say about a year before, you know when you're going in to shoot.
Because you have Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That comes out in March, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And what's that series all about?
It's basically, you know, you catch up with Sam and you catch up with Bucky after the blip. And you follow them with, you know, trying to figure out how they're going to move forward as individuals.
What's going on in that cyborg brain of yours?
You don't want to know.
Oh, yeah, I can see it working. Gears turning. Oh, they're malfunctioning. They're on fire.
God, I hate you.
How did Juilliard and Broadway being in plays, how did it prepare you for what you're going through right now?
It made me appreciate it more. I mean, for me, look, Juilliard was hell or high water. It was a very, very difficult experience for me being an 18-year-old kid from New Orleans going to New York. It was very difficult. It put me in a position where I really appreciate the good times now. And that's why I have so much fun when I'm at work, because I have the dream job. I literally won the lottery every time I get a job.
How did your parents let you go to New York? Did they let you go to New York?
Exactly.
Okay. That's what I thought the better question was.
It was like me with a stick with a little ball of clothes on the back, hitchhiking up 95 all the way to New York.
But what got in you that you were willing to take that chance?
I loved my family. I loved where I was from. And when I was 15, I went up to Juilliard for the minority sleepover experience. And they invite all these kids from around the country. You come up for a weekend, you meet the teachers, you take classes, you meet different students. And when I did that, I knew that I had to be in New York. So when I got back home, there was this actor here named Wendell Pierce. And everything Wendell Pierce did, I wanted to do. Wendell Pierce went to Juilliard. I was like, God damn it, I'm going to Juilliard. So I just followed Wendell Pierce like he was the man that he is. And I knew I had to go to Juilliard. There was no coming back.
And then you see him in The Wire.
And then I see him every day. I mean, I've known Wendell since I was 13 years old. Like, my whole goal in my career was to grow up and be the actor that Wendell Pierce is.
But also, when you play the side, like Hurt Locker, like, do you have to gear yourself up to be the second lead or the supporting, like, how does that work mentally, that you want to be great, and if you steal a scene, then you steal a scene, but do you have to almost compartmentalize to say, my role is not to be bigger than Jeremy Renner in a scene?
I'm ready to die, Jane.
Well, you're not going to die out here, bro.
Another 2 inches. Shrapnel things by, slices my throat. I bleed out like a pig in the sand. I mean, my parents are kept, but they don't count, man. Who else? I don't even have a son. I want a son. I want a little boy, Will.
How does that work?
Not at all. I mean, and I look at it, acting is tennis. So as long as I'm standing across from you, and when you hit the ball at me, I volley it back across the net, I'm doing my job. Coming up in theater and, you know, being the nerdy drama kid, my goal in this business wasn't to be a celebrity. Like, I never wanted to be famous. I wanted to do plays at the Guthrie and Mark Taper. I wanted to work, you know, at Alabama Shakespeare Festival. I wanted to do theater because of the way theater affected me. The movie thing kind of just happened because somebody saw me doing a play and put me in 8 Mile.
That was it.
That was it. I was doing a play. We wrote a play. My friend Michael DeVell Wynn wrote a play about Tupac called Up Against the Wind. And we all opted out of doing a Chekhov play and put on a student production of Up Against the Wind. And then Jim Nicola from New York Theater Workshop saw it and moved it off Broadway. And when it went off Broadway, it took off. I mean, we were on the cover of the living section of the arts section of the New York Times. You know, it was a huge opportunity.
You say you don't want to be a celebrity, but you sometimes don't have a choice in that.
Well, you do. That's why I live in New Orleans. Celebrity is not a human emotion. It's not like happy, sad celebrity. No, celebrity is a man-made entity. So if you buy into it, you lose yourself. You lose that humanity and dignity who made you, you know, what you are, you know, but for me, what's really important is able to hang out in my city, have a po' boy anytime I want, have the people I went to school with stop by and tell me I did a good job or I sucked in my movie.
But there's always the guys on the corner who know more than everybody.
And I had coffee with that dude today.
Because those are the guys who, they never get in the game, but they want to tell you how bad you were with your
100%. Game. You know, I always have those experiences here because it's such a small city. You know everybody, and everybody remember me from being a kid. And now being here is really humbling to see that so much has changed, but so much has stayed the same. So the idea of celebrity for me in New Orleans, it's foreign. It's not something, it's not a reality that I live in. And when I go to my restaurants, when I go to my bars, when I go to my events, the locals here look out for me.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
What do people say to you on the street?
You know, it varies. You know, sometimes people are weird. Now it's different because I just run away from people. A lot of times it's always middle-aged men. They just want to touch you. They want to, like, they want to be your friend.
Because?
Because you're in movies and they have this man. Like, the man crush is real when it comes to superhero movies. Because these dudes, they just come up to you and they're like, hey, man. It's like, what's up? Yeah, man. Wow. Whoa, man. Yeah, no doubt. Whoa. Hey, you want to, like, get a drink together? It's like, nah, man. Nah, I'm actually sitting here with my friends. All right, you mind if I sit down with you guys? No, please don't. You know, it's the man crush is real. I'm all about controlled environments. If you touch me and there's a group of people watching you touch me, it's okay. But if you touch me and I'm just standing there and there's nobody there, I get freaked out. I don't like people in my space.
Do they quote lines to you?
All the time. The biggest movie I have, I feel, for quotes is 8 Mile. Like every day, even though 8 Mile was 21 years ago, every day some dude comes up to me and is just in love with the idea of me being Papa Doc and him being Eminem. It's never like, you know, the person you would want. It's always like some weird dude.
Don't you think Papa Doc would do better if he had another shot at Eminem?
Well, I know for a fact. I want to do a reunion, like the old man, you know, battle between me and Eminem and see who would win. Because now we're both kind of just old men. So I think it would be a whole different outcome if we did it again.
How much tension was in the room?
It was crazy when we shot that scene because there were like maybe 250 extras and all of them were local rappers from Detroit. And I wasn't a rapper. So everybody was looking at me like they should have my role. Everybody in the room was like, yo, I should have got cast as that. He's not a rapper, blah, 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 blah. So it was a lot of tension for me. I was the Saints and Eminem was Green Bay. No matter what happened, he was going to destroy me.
Yeah, but you played Tupac.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's acting.
Oh. Well, why didn't you act like a better rapper there with Eminem?
I tried. Like, I had the moment on my face where I felt like I was going to say something, and then I just fell apart. It was a rough situation.
Got to do this coin toss, and being that Papa Doc is a defending champion, you get to choose. What do you want to do, heads or tails?
Heads.
Heads. Okay. Who goes first?
Let that go first.
But just the look, you know, so much of acting is, it doesn't even have to be verbal. Like, there's so much of it that you can just interpret. And just looking at your face and the different phases you went through in a span of 90 seconds is really remarkable. Because I don't know what you're thinking at the time, because you got to do reversals and all those things. But right. Like, how do you process, I'm being humbled, getting my lunch handed to me in front of these guys who want to be up here, and Eminem does this professionally. Like, what do you think to be able to act or react in that situation?
Well, the thing is, I always thought it was cool because I didn't realize I was being humiliated the way I was. I thought everybody was like, yo, it's Eminem. And then the movie came out and everybody was like, yo, you a loser. And I'm like, oh. I thought I was doing a good job.
Anthony, I hate to tell you, you were a loser. You were. You know, it's 20 years later. I can finally say it to you. When 9 Mile comes out, that's when you're going to get a piece of him. Yeah, that's when you're going to get a piece of him.
I thought I did a great job, but everybody was like, nah, you're a loser, homie.
Did you take anything from the Captain America sets? Like, do you keep stuff when you do a movie?
They watched on the Marvel stuff. They watched that stuff pretty intensely. But there's a few little trinkets I like was able to pick up and run out with.
But you didn't do anything like 8 Mile or Hurt Locker. Or, like, if you do a movie, you leave a movie behind?
No. There, I have one piece of memorabilia from pretty much every movie I've done. The Captain America thing is hard to leave behind because every other year, we were doing another Avengers or Captain America or so, you know, it kind of stays with you because you know you're going back to it.
Did they give you the microphone you couldn't speak into at 8 Mile? You should have asked for that.
I should have asked for that. You're right.
What's the strangest thing that's happened to you?
Oh, my God. Oh, so I was at a charity event, and when I played baseball, I modeled my entire game after Barry Larkin, right? So I look across the room, and I see Barry Larkin. This was right before he got in the Hall of Fame, and I was like, yo, it's Barry Larkin. So I make my way like a weird fanboy across the room to Barry Larkin, and then I'm the weird guy, and I'm like, yo, what's up, Barry? I'm like, oh, this is cool. Oh, man, Barry Larkin. So we're standing there and we're smoking cigars and we're talking. And his friend comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, I know you." I was like, "All right." His friend takes my cigar off my lip, puffs it, and goes, "Yo, that's a great smoke," and hands it back to me. Who puffs up another man's cigar?
And lives to tell about it in my neighborhood.
And lives to tell about it. I was like, "Yo, you lucky you were Barry Larkin, man, because, you know, man, Barry Larkin. I just want to meet Barry."
But so you fanboyed with Barry Larkin, but you fanboy over other actors last time you did that.
You know, I fanboyed over Will Smith because, you know, Will Smith is the pinnacle. Eddie Murphy, I would definitely, I've never met Eddie Murphy. If I was in the same room with Eddie Murphy, I would definitely lose my shit. When they made Coming to America 2, I told my agent if he didn't get me in that movie, like, heads were going to roll. You know, it's one of those things that you put on your resume, like, I work with Eddie Murphy.
But you fanboyed Will Smith and paid the price.
It was an awkward racial moment. So my publicist called me and she's like, "Yo, you're in Budapest. Will Smith is doing his birthday party in Budapest. Do you want to present him his birthday cake?" And I'm like, I would jump out of Will Smith's birthday cake.
With nothing on.
So, with nothing on. With "I Love Will" written on my chest. So, you know, he's doing a whole concert. And then they're like, "Yo, bring out the cake." So I push out the cake. And Will Smith turns around and he goes, "Yo, Anthony Mackie." And I'm like, "You know who I am?" He's like, "Yeah." So I go to hug him, right? And he goes to like give me like a high five, like, brother. Yeah. So I go to hug him. And when I did this, he went to grab my hand and just like caught me in my, I mean, the perfect connection with a right cross from Will Smith.
No, that's from Ali. You got hit by Muhammad Ali.
I know. And I was like, that is a good right cross, man. That dude has a good right cross. But I did not go down.
Did you want to have input on your name? I always wonder when you're an actor, the character's name. Like, if you could have named yourself, would you have given yourself that name?
Well, I hate the Atlanta Falcons. So it pains me every time. Like, being the Falcon, nothing gives me more joy than letting people in Atlanta know that your namesake is from New Orleans and he's a Saints fan. It makes me feel so good.
Do you hate Tom Brady now?
You hate Tom Brady because of his greatness. Like, he's so great, you want to see him fail. His life is too perfect. He makes too much money. He has an amazingly beautiful wife, successful, beautiful kids. He can do everything. He can play football until he's 60. I mean, he has, his life is too good.
Who would be Tom Brady in your business?
The Tom Brady of our business would probably be Tom Cruise.
But you don't hate Tom Cruise, do you?
No, I love Tom Cruise. I want to do a movie. I would jump out of Tom Cruise's birthday cake.
You'd let Tom Cruise smack you in the face, too.
I would definitely take a right hook from Tom Cruise.
Hey, thank you. You're an easy guy to root for, and I appreciate, you know, the time, Anthony. I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks a lot, man. I've been watching you for a long time, so it's great to finally talk to you.
Thank you, Anthony. Take care.
Have a good one.
Episodes of IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick are available exclusively on Amazon Music. Please make sure to follow us in the Amazon Music app to get every episode. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick was created, hosted, and produced by me, Dan Patrick. It's also produced by Brendan Pike, edited by Nathan Moody, and executive produced by Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood for Workhouse Media. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick is a production of Dan Patrick Productions and IMDb in association with Workhouse Media.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.